I am grateful to CNN for the nearly 18 years I've spent here doing the news. People often ask me if the highlight of my career at CNN was at the White House covering Donald Trump. Actually, no. That moment came here when I covered former President Barack Obama's trip to Cuba in 2016 and had the chance to question the dictator there, Raul Castro, about the island's political prisoners. As the son of a Cuban refugee, I took home this lesson. It is never a good time to bow down to a tyrant. I've always believed it's the job of the press to hold power to account. I've always tried to do that here at CNN, and I plan on going doing all of that in the future. One final message. Don't give in to the lies. Don't give in to the fear. Hold on to the truth and to hope. Even if you have to get out your phone, record that message. I will not give in to the lies. I will not give in to the fear.
I will not give in to the lies. I will not give in to the fear.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Good luck, Jim Acosta.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
And thank you for all.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. In Lanchester, Pennsylvania on W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com, where we are now celebrating 21 years of troublemaking and muckraking.
That's funny because you only look like you're maybe, I don't know, 23 or 24.
But okay, thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thank you all for joining us today for the Bradcast. We will not give in to the lies. We will not give in to the fear, as Jim Acosta notes after he announced that he was leaving CNN on air after they had said they wanted to put him at 12 midnight for some reason instead of his long-running morning program. In any case, we've got a lot to get to today in his spirit as Donald Trump's destruction of America and its laws and its Constitution continue to worsen, seemingly by the hour since we last spoke on yesterday's show. But as there is too much happening all at once, that means we necessarily we miss stuff that is of note that, of course, by the way, is by design as the Trump administration tries to, in their own words, flood the zone so that we, the public, the media, cannot keep up, allowing them to get away with all sorts of things. At least that's what they think. At least that's what they hope. It's a pretty smart strategy that the media, including us here at the Bradcast, have yet to figure out how to counter above and beyond what we try to do, focus on what matters as well as we can and catching up with as much as possible, even if late, as we move forward. To that end, though, it seems like a month ago, Donald Trump was out here in California on Friday of last week pretending to tour damage in fire zones and pretending to care about doing something about it, even as he lied about pretty much all of it and spoke about ending FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and giving money instead as needed to individual states to let them worry about helping Americans survive after natural and man-made disasters. That, of course, ultimately means privatizing FEMA if this scheme were to move forward, since states, unlike the federal government, can't afford to keep an army of disaster relief experts and workers on salary every day for disasters that may occur every few years at most. It would also require congressional approval, by the way. Trump can't just wave a wand or sign a pen to make FEMA go away, though he can, or at least he thinks he can, apparently, stop allocating monies that Congress has appropriated for them. But we'll get to that in a bit. And a bit more on the L.A. fires and the fallout later this hour in Desi Doyen's latest Green News Report.
Yes.
But for now, Trump has been floating the idea, along with Republican members of Congress, of putting conditions on aid to Los Angeles in the wake of the devastating fires out here since the beginning of the year. Openly discussing withholding crucial disaster aid unless California makes right-wing policy changes. Well, earlier this month, as MSNBC's Jahan Jones noted yesterday, Republicans, including far-right influencer Charlie Kirk, had said that that funds should be contingent on California firing Kristen Crowley, LA's first female and openly gay fire chief. And, of course, Donald Trump has blamed the fires on California's water distribution policy, though experts have pushed back on that claim, saying it's basically nonsense. In fact, we had plenty of water, even in an exceptionally dry year. Our reservoirs are full, even if fire hydrant systems are not built to put out hundreds of fires all at the same time. That's why airborne firefighting is what that's for. But you can't get airborne when there are 100-mile-per-hour wind gusts, as was the case when the fires initially sparked. But none of that has stopped him from demanding that California officials change their water policy, claiming that there is some sort of secret spigot up in Northern California that can be opened up to flow more water to Southern California that would somehow have prevented the fires from starting in the first place. On Monday night, Trump posted this bizarre post to his failing social media site saying, quote, "The United States military just entered the great state of California and, under emergency powers, turned on the water flowing abundantly from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. The days of putting a fake environmental argument over the people are over. Enjoy the water, California." Now, what was he talking about? Well, nobody seemed to know, at least as of Tuesday morning, when his press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, in her very first press briefing at the White House, was asked about this and apparently decided to, well, I guess, pretend along with him.
Carolyn, on California, could you please clarify what the military did with the water last night as referenced in the president's Truth Social post?
The water has been turned back on in California, and this comes just days after President Trump visited Pacific Palisades, and as you all saw, applied tremendous pressure on state and local officials in Pacific Palisades, including Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass, to turn on the water and to direct that water to places in the south and in the middle of the state that have been incredibly dry, which has led to the expansion, the rapid expansion of these fires.
No, okay. there was no water turned on to flow. It did rain over the weekend, so maybe that's what she's referring to, you know, Trump's godlike ability to make it rain. But, Des, were you able to figure out a little bit about what Trump thinks that he was referring to there?
Yes, what Trump was lying about. And by the way, this is a huge lie. So what happened was representatives from DOGE, remember the Department of Government Efficiency
nonsense department?
So they visited a pumping station in Northern California where the federal water pumps had been turned off for 3 days. Just 3 days they were offline for maintenance. The maintenance job was complete. They showed up. They turned the pump's back on. That's it.
Well, that ought to stop the fires. I'm glad he took care of that. I'm going to enjoy the water.
Yeah, and also I just want to make it clear that water from the Pacific Northwest does not flow to the Central Valley of California. There is no conveyance for that. When Trump says that, he is delusional.
Back in reality land, sort of, over the weekend, Trump added to his apparent list of conditions for California to receive federal fire disaster aid, telling reporters on Friday that the state should impose strict photo ID restrictions on voters at the polling place in order to receive federal disaster aid to help tens of thousands of residents who lost their home and are in dire need of assistance. When he was asked if North Carolina, where he was also touring in recent days following devastation there by the climate change enhanced Hurricane Helene last year that hit a particularly Republican part of the state, when he was asked by a reporter if North Carolina would have any conditions on disaster aid to them, well, he threw in a whole bunch of lies about a whole bunch of stuff, but he made clear that they would face no conditions for their disaster aid.
You talk about conditions being placed on aid to California, voter ID and the like. Are there any conditions that you're going to put on aid to North Carolina?
We're going to do a lot for North Carolina. You know, they've been very slow. I don't know why it's been so bad. This has been one of the worst I've seen. Katrina, of course, you know, was something that obviously that was a long time ago. That was not good. But this has been very slow. I don't know if that was for political reasons, because they lost the state. You know, Biden lost the state. Maybe he felt he doesn't care. Maybe there were other reasons. I don't know. But this has been very slow. By any standard, this has been very slow. And we're gonna make up for lost time.
No conditions you're going to push for aid?
Well, in California, I have a condition. In California, we want them to have voter ID so the people have a voice, because right now the people don't have a voice because you don't know who's voting and it's very corrupt. And we also want them to release the water. If they released the water, they wouldn't have had a problem. If they released the water when I told them to, because I told them to do it 7 years ago, if they would have done it, you wouldn't have had the problem that you had. You might not have even had a fire. So, but here I don't have that. It's a different thing. You got hit by a storm. The people are incredible. They worked really well. Franklin was fantastic, and other groups. By the way, other groups came in that were also fantastic. And other states came in, Tennessee and a couple of others came in, and they really helped. That's the way it's supposed to be. No, this is a different kind of a thing.
By the way, Mr. President, other countries came in to help California during the fires. Canada and Mexico came to help us. Now, there was all sorts of just too many lies in that statement for me to be able to even respond to.
It's all frankly. Delusional nonsense.
So, but the short answer is no. There will be no conditions on disaster aid for Republicans in North Carolina, only for Democrats in California, at least if Donald Trump has his way. And by the way, good on that reporter, I'm not sure who it was, for pressing Trump there for an answer to the question that he didn't want to answer. He never did answer it, apparently, but not for lack of trying by the reporter. So good on him. As to his claims about photo ID voting restrictions being needed in California so that the people have a voice, quote, because it's very corrupt, etc. Now, as someone who follows elections and voting systems, including in California here, just about as close as anyone in the entire nation for the past 20 years, I can tell you there's nothing particularly corrupt about California's voting system that makes it rife with fraud, at least no more than anywhere else in the country, and in many ways, arguably less so. But that's not what they told Donald Trump on Fox News over the past 15 or 20 years, and he lost bigly in New York, so it must be due to fraud. And the way to fix it, of course, is to prevent people, legal voters, from being able to vote. As Governor Gavin Newsom's office posted to Twitter on Friday, quote, under current California law, you must be a California resident and U.S. citizen and attest to being one under penalty of perjury and provide a form of ID such as a driver's license or a passport that has been approved by the Secretary of State in order to register to vote, which, by the way, happens to be the law already in all 50 states. But as Jahan Jones correctly points out, Trump's proposed remedy fix to this non-existent problem of widespread voter fraud is right-wing parlance for policies that disproportionately disenfranchise non-white and other marginalized groups for various reasons. Voter ID, as they like to call it. Despite the fact that some 30 million Americans who are legal voters do not have the type, the very specific type of ID that right-wingers are demanding, because they know that there are some, you know, 20 to 30 million Americans who happen to vote a certain way disproportionately that they would like to prevent from voting. Trump's ultimatum, Jahan Jones notes, is all the more disturbing when you consider that the town of Altadena out here, which has a significant black population, was severely hurt by the wildfires in California. And please note that Trump did not tour the disaster in Altadena when he was here. He only went to the Palisades fires, where the wealthier people live, even though the Eaton fire in Altadena was at least as disastrous. And now he's suggesting making their recovery contingent on California accepting policies that could make it harder for some of those people in Altadena to be able to vote. By the way, for the record, for those whose driver's licenses also burned up when their homes burned down, well, they would also be prevented from voting under such a scheme, no matter what color they are. And by the way, as Jones also points out, California Congressman Brad Sherman, who looked Trump straight in the eye during a televised meeting last Friday out here in L.A. with the mayor and several members of Congress, and warned that his cruel ultimatum for disaster aid could easily come back to hurt Republicans if a Democrat regains the White House and decides to use similar tactics against Republican-led states, which frankly is unthinkable. But I'm glad that Congressman Sherman made the point.
And I know you've talked about policies of California that you're not a fan of, but I've been in Congress for 28 years. I really disagree with Louisiana on their abortion policy. I disagree with them on their campaign finance policy. I disagree with North Dakota on their gun policy. And I would never turn to somebody from Louisiana and say, you keep living on your cousin's couch, because we're not going to help you rebuild until Louisiana agrees with me on a woman's right to choose. So I'm hoping that we can get these funds and that we don't punish individuals for the policies of their state. You can disagree with them, and I think you've got some ideas. I look forward to us listening.
So good on Congressman Sherman for at least trying to make that point as the TV cameras were rolling. Again, more on the latest fallout and more on the LA fires later this hour in Desi's Green News Report. Meanwhile, back in D.C., well, it seems like the wheels are now coming off as the authoritarian Trump administration is actually getting to work to undermine the law and the Constitution and, well, pretty much every aspect of American life, including where we will start with the health of Americans and the world, which, if you were paying attention during the last pandemic, also affects, yes, the health of Americans, how healthy the rest of the world is. Yesterday, while we were on air, actually, it was reported by AP that U.S. public health officials have been told to stop working with the World Health Organization effective immediately. A U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention official reportedly sent a memo to senior leaders at the agency on Sunday night, telling them all staff who work with the WHO must immediately stop their collaborations and, quote, await further guidance. Experts said the sudden stoppage was a stunning surprise and would set back work on investigating and trying to stop outbreaks of Marburg virus and Mpox, previously known as monkeypox, in Africa, as well as other brewing global threats. It also comes as health authorities around the world are monitoring avian flu outbreaks, bird flu outbreaks among U.S. livestock, which has already reportedly jumped to humans, including one reported case out here in California. The AP viewed a copy of the Sunday CDC memo. It said the stop work policy applied to, quote, all CDC staff engaging with WHO through technical working groups, coordinating centers, advisory boards, cooperative agreements, or other means, in person or virtual. It also says CDC staff are not allowed to visit WHO offices. Last week, as part of his blizzard of presidential signings, Trump issued an executive order to begin the process of withdrawing the U.S. entirely from the WHO, but that did not take effect immediately. Leaving the WHO actually requires the approval of Congress and that the U.S. meet its financial obligations for the current fiscal year. And, oh yeah, the U.S. must also provide a one-year notice before leaving. But I guess he can soft quit by, we'll stay in, but we're just not going to talk to you. Don't talk to me anymore. His administration also told federal health agencies to stop most communications with the public through at least the end of this month. Dr. Jeffrey Klausner, a University of Southern California public health expert who collaborates with WHO on work against sexually transmitted infections, said, quote, stopping communications and meetings with WHO is a big problem. People thought there would be a slow withdrawal. This has really caught everyone with their pants down. Maybe not the greatest way for an expert in sexually transmitted diseases to describe it. But you get the point. He said, quote, talking to WHO is a two-way street. Between the two agencies, we benefit from each other's expertise. The collaboration allows the U.S. to learn about new tests, new treatments, emerging outbreaks, information which can help us protect Americans abroad and at home. The two agencies' staffers are in daily contact about health dangers and how to stop them. The collaboration halt isn't the only global health effect of Trump's executive orders. Last week, the president also froze spending on another critical program known as PEPFAR, or the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief. The anti-HIV program is credited with saving some 25 million lives, including those of 5.5 million children, since it was started by Republican President George W. Bush, believe it or not. PEPFAR was included in a Trump administration freeze on foreign aid spending slated to last at least 3 months. PEPFAR provides HIV medication to more than 20 million people. And according to International AIDS Society President Beatriz Grinstein in a statement, quote, stopping its funding essentially stops their HIV treatment. If that happens, people are going to die and HIV will resurge. According to the New York Times, the Trump administration has instructed organizations in other countries to stop dispersing HIV medications purchased with U.S. aid, even if the drugs have already been obtained and are sitting in local clinics. Don't give them out. Don't give them their AIDS medicine. Is this what he meant by make America healthy again? But wait, it gets worse. With everything else that Trump did in his first week, I think this one sort of fell through the cracks a bit in the national media. In fact, I didn't even hear about it myself until late last week. Until Desi, you talked to a family member who's a scientist and says that her family was now on sort of pins and needles with three grants that she had applied for and had expected to receive now being up in the air.
Yes.
So what happened here? What happened? Well, via Scientific American and Nature Magazine last week, confusion and anxiety is rippling through the U.S. health research community in the U.S. this week following Trump taking office as the 47th president, his administration has abruptly canceled research grant reviews, as you heard Desi's family member describe there. canceled research grant reviews, travel, and training for scientists inside and outside the National Institutes of Health, the world's largest public biomedical funder. Adding to the worry, the Trump team appears to have deleted entire web pages about diversity programs and diversity-related grants from the agency's site. The canceling of meetings and travel is part of a pause in external communications issued on January 21, so the day after he was sworn in, by the NIH's parent organization, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, or HHS. Researchers who spoke to Nature say that although a short day-long pause in communications at U.S. agencies has occurred in the past, when new administrations began to reorient strategy, the reach and length of the Trump team's pause, so-called pause here, is set to last until at least February 1, and that it is unprecedented. Without advisory committee meetings, the NIH cannot issue research grants, temporarily freezing 80% of the agency's $47 billion budget that funds research across the country and beyond. Quote, "I have never seen anything like this before," said Carol LeBon, a developmental biologist at Northwestern University in Illinois, who has received funding from the agency for more than 20 years. The uncertainty caused by the pause will be, quote, devastating for the scientific community, particularly for early career researchers, LeBon added, which frankly sounds just like your family member, Des.
This family member is a research scientist at a state public health agency. They said via text to me that it is such a disheartening mess. I don't even know where to start. It all feels equally vital and important to take action on. Today, I've reached out to everyone whose safety is on the line in my life and told them to reach out and I will help, that they aren't alone and will find a way. This family member also said that the Trump administration's bombshell will disrupt public health and research very long term. There's a very real chance, this family member said, there's a very real chance that the career that I've built helps others live healthier lives and one that trains other medical professionals will end in the next 2 years. I am 100% grant funded, meaning that if the money goes, my job ends, my knowledge leaves the field, and there are fewer resources to train the next generation, not to mention the impact on people's health, too. This family member also said, listen, this country is on the verge of losing its status as the world leader in research, a field that doubles economic return for every dollar invested. So gutting it helps literally no one. Reach out to your representative. We need your voice.
No meetings of cancer researchers to discuss issuing new federal grants, no scientific reports on lessons from fighting avian flu, bird flu, not even private briefings for congressional staffers who have questions about health agency operations. That's how Washington Post leads its coverage on this story. Health officials and experts said this week that they are reeling after that news that the Trump administration abruptly halted external communication at the Department of HHS and its agencies, including the CDC and the NIH. The decisions to pause communications and travel, which were not publicly announced, trickled out as agency staff members and healthcare workers across the country have tried to make sense of suddenly canceled briefings, updates, events. In interviews, healthcare personnel described panicked efforts to learn if their programs had been affected, with some speaking on the condition of anonymity because they feared retribution from this new administration. Victoria Secret, and for good reason, because that's what this administration is about, retribution, revenge. Victoria Seawalt, the chair of population sciences at City of Hope Comprehensive Cancer Center, was scheduled to lead an NIH study session last week. That was abruptly canceled. The session was scheduled to review grants focused on cancers and other chronic illnesses. She said there is no precedent for this pause. Quote, "Everything is basically in chaos, and frankly, everyone is terrified," she said. "This is like a meteor just crashed into all of our cancer centers and research areas. And let me be clear, the pause apparently means that ongoing cancer studies, clinical trials in progress with cancer patients are now being stopped. The CDC canceled a monthly call scheduled for this coming Monday with the entire clinical laboratory community. It had been intended to share updates about emerging threats and testing changes. Quote, it's hard to imagine a worse time to prohibit federal officials from communicating directly with the clinical laboratory community and the public health workforce, said one laboratory leader, noting the slew of winter viruses and increasing risk of, yes, avian flu. Viruses don't care who the CDC director or HHS secretary is or what spin newly appointed political leadership want to put on their agency's efforts, that source said. Christopher Fox, the CEO of International Association for Dental, Oral, and Craniofacial Research, said it's really shutting down the research pipeline in our country. He said he logged on to a long-scheduled meeting hosted by NIH last week, only to hear from a federal official that communications had been paused and that he should stand by. Well, 40 minutes later, he said another NIH official finally joined the broadcast and said, oh, session was postponed. He called the news, quote, devastating. The CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, which you may remember from during the pandemic, the MMWR, it has been providing crucial weekly reports, eagerly awaited by not just the nation, but the world for decades every single week as it provides clinical updates to healthcare personnel. It had been published at its regular weekly cadence after Trump's first inauguration, but it did not appear at its regular time on Thursday. This week's edition was set to include updates on avian flu, the bird flu epidemic that could become the world's next pandemic and is being watched very closely, or at least it was until last week. This week, who knows? The list of postponed meetings has continued to grow, such as a planned meeting this week of the President's Council on how to fight antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Seems like something that we should know about. There is more, but you get the gist. This apparently is how we make Americans die again. But overnight, things got still worse. Potentially way worse, arguably constitutional crisis worse. That, plus Desi Doyen to cheer us up with her GNR, with some actual good news, believe it or not. All of that straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
And I wonder, still I wonder, who'll stop the rain?
Good question. I think it's going to be raining for quite a while. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. Metaphorical rain, of course. Unconstitutional rain, of course. Authoritarian rain, of course. According to an unexpected memo from Donald Trump's budget office on Monday night, the White House has ordered a pause in grants, loans, and other federal financial assistance, potentially paralyzing a vast swath of programs and sowing confusion and alarm among the array of groups that depend on them. So it is not just NIH research for cancer and so forth, as I was discussing in the previous segment. It sounds like damn near everything in the federal government. The directive, the surprise directive, threatened to upend funds that course through the American economy, hundreds of billions of dollars in grants to state, local, and tribal governments, disaster aid relief, education, transportation funding, loan to small businesses, all of it stopped. At least that was the order. Nonprofit news outlet Notice, or News of the United States, notes the list of programs that could be touched by the order is vast. Medicaid, disaster relief, Farm Aid, student loan programs, Head Start, highway funds, nutrition assistance, rent assistance, and dozens of other programs. But the two-page memo from Matthew J. Vaith, the acting director of the Office of Management and Budget, or OMB, left the scope of the pause and much else unclear, according to the New York Times. Among the uncertainties was whether President Trump had the authority to unilaterally halt these funds already allocated by Congress. Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, the Democratic leader in the Senate, said in a statement that the memo, quote, blatantly disobeys the law. Congress, he said, approved these investments, and they are not optional. They are the law, Schumer said, adding that, quote, Donald Trump must direct his administration to reverse course immediately, and the taxpayers' money should be distributed to the people. Now, the law that Chuck Schumer is referring to there, which I suspect you and I will be soon learning a whole lot about, is called the Impoundment Control Act. It was enacted by Congress, signed by the president, in response to the Nixon presidency after his attempt to hold back spending that had been allocated by Congress, spending that he didn't like. So, you know, Congress said, yes, spend it. The White House signed the bill that would allocate that money. But then when it came time to actually give that money out, Richard Nixon said, no, I don't want to. I don't want to put any money into that. I'm not going to put it out. So he impounded that spending that had been approved by Congress, which constitutionally controls the nation's purse strings, not the president. Sorry, Mr. Nixon, and sorry, Mr. Trump. But in the wake of Donald Trump trying to withhold funding during his first term that had been allocated by Congress to Ukraine, you'll recall that he was holding back the money to Ukraine unless the president of Ukraine agreed to announce a pretend phony investigation of Hunter and Joe Biden to try to help Donald Trump win the 2020 election. All of that, in case you forgot, that's what led to Donald Trump's first impeachment. His impounding of money that was supposed to be sent according to the law. Well, since then, Republicans have decided that the Impoundment Control Act itself is somehow unconstitutional, and they want to challenge it at the Supreme Court, the friendly Supreme Court, no doubt. The law allows a temporary hold by the president, as I understand it, but it must be for a very specific reason, and he must notify Congress as to why he is holding it. Apparently, none of that has been done here. Akin to what Trump did on Friday when he fired 17 attorneys general, he's allowed to hold back the money, but according to the law, he's got to let Congress know why. Same thing with the attorneys general. He's allowed to fire them, but he... As the law about attorneys general was actually strengthened as recently as 2022, he must notify Congress 30 days in advance and give the very specific reasons that he is firing any particular attorney general, much less 17 of them. Well, Trump violated that law by not doing so before telling the attorneys general to get lost. That's what he did on Friday, ignoring that law, and that's what he now seems to be doing, ignoring the Impoundment Control Act. He seems to be doing the very same thing. And I guess he is hoping that this will be the beginning of the challenge to that Impoundment Control Act. In his memo, Vaith directed federal agencies to, quote, temporarily pause all activities related to obligation or disbursement of all federal financial assistance and any other program that included, quote, DEI, woke gender ideology, and the Green New Deal. Vaith signaled that the pause, which was set to go into effect on Tuesday, according to the memo, at 5 p.m., it would continue until at least mid-February. They're just going to stop sending out billions and billions of dollars until mid-February, and then, well, we'll see. Maybe we'll start it up again. Vaith said, quote, "The use of federal resources to advance Marxist equity, transgenderism, and Green New Deal social engineering policies is a waste of taxpayer dollars that does not improve the day-to-day lives of those we serve."
It's like a Mad Libs of right-wing,
Fox
crazy
News Mad Libs.
Yeah.
It's crazy. As the Times helpfully notes here, it was not immediately clear what programs would actually fall under those categories. For example, the Green New Deal was a policy proposal that never actually became the law. Thank you, New York Times. The Washington Post observes Trump and his aides have long vowed to halt spending on programs reviled by the right, apparently even imaginary ones, like DEI programs and foreign aid. But the order appears to go far beyond those priorities to affect programs that serve tens of millions of Americans. Experts said the memo, as written, was poised to bring a rapid halt to scores of federal functions, from assistance to homeless shelters to financial aid for college students, health grants distributed by the CDC, and state aid for disaster reconstruction. All of that may face delays. Developers expecting federal grants to expand the nation's energy supply could be disruptive, which is strange since Donald Trump also declared there was a national energy emergency, which isn't actually a thing. It doesn't exist. There is no such thing as a national energy emergency, but he declared one anyway, and now here he is holding back money for federal grants that would expand the nation's energy supply. Questions quickly emerged about whether Medicaid, the health insurance program used by more than 70 million Americans, would also see a pause in payments, which are distributed from the federal government to the states. During her White House briefing on Tuesday morning, Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt seemed unable to say whether or not Medicaid would be affected. The memo notes that Social Security and Medicare would not be affected, but doesn't say anything about Medicaid, which is, you know, medical assistance to 70 million Americans, 70 million low-income Americans. And she couldn't answer the reporter's question when she was asked whether this memo would affect that, whether this spending freeze would also affect spending to states for Medicaid.
Now, remember, folks that rely on Medicaid include the elderly in nursing homes and people with children who have illnesses and require expensive medications. I have a friend who, she says, Medicaid portals are down 1 week in and my child's health care is now inaccessible. Thank you to everyone who voted for Trump. Kindly unfriend me. I am terrified for my friends whose children rely on more expensive medications.
The memo specifies programs that support non-governmental organizations would also be affected. Nonprofit groups reacted with alarm. Quote, "This order is a potential five-alarm fire for nonprofits and the people and communities they serve," said Diane Yentl, the chief executive of the National Council of Nonprofits. From pausing research on cures for childhood cancer to halting food assistance, safety from domestic violence, and closing suicide hotlines, the impact of even a short pause in funding could be devastating and cost lives, she added. This order could decimate thousands of organizations and leave neighbors without the services they need. The memo cites, quote, more than $3 trillion in federal financial assistance that could be affected by the directive, but the source of that number was not clear. Another figure the memo cited for total federal spending was significantly inflated. Government analysts estimate that the budget for the fiscal year 2024 was about $6.25 trillion, but the memo asserted that the government spent nearly $10 trillion in that fiscal year. So, yeah, they seem to be sort of just making this up as they go along, no matter who it hurts. Notice reports the effects could be severe depending on how long the freeze lasts, particularly for low-income Americans. In 2022, federal dollars were the second largest source of revenue for states, only behind taxes, with federal grants accounting for $1.1 trillion of state revenue. That's about a third of what states collect in total. So the states are going to be in big, big trouble. Quote, if the federal government doesn't uphold its end of the deal, then states are put in this difficult situation where they are put in the red because all of a sudden they don't have the federal funding that they are supposed to have. According to Bobby Kogan, a federal budget expert at Center for American Progress, he said this means that some of them are going to have to eat the cost or shutter those programs. We are literally talking about people being kicked out of their homes in the middle of winter, he added. Democrats on Capitol Hill were quick to lambaste the order with the top Democratic appropriators in the House and Senate. Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro and Senator Patty Murray writing in a joint letter on Monday night that, quote, the scope of what you are ordering is breathtaking, unprecedented, and will have devastating consequences across the country. Their letter says, we write today to urge you in the strongest possible terms to uphold the law and Constitution. Well, good luck with that, ladies. Don't forget, he's a king now. He cannot be held criminally liable for violating the law. So what incentive does he have to not violate the law? And any of his staffers who might violate the law on his behalf, well, they can just be pardoned. He can just pardon them, can't he? DeLauro and Murray also called into question the Office of Management and Budget, the OMB's authority to issue such a sweeping order, noting that the Trump administration is effectively asking agencies to disregard the law. Yes, of course. That's correct, lady. What, ladies, what part of lawless, authoritarian, fascist government has not sunk in there yet? The law is the law, they wrote, and we demand you in your role as acting OMB director reverse course to ensure requirements enacted into law are faithfully met and the nation's spending laws are implemented as intended. Also, by the way, many farmers and small business owners who take out loans and receive grants from the federal government are going to be affected here. It's unclear if they would count as individuals because there's a note in the memo that says assistance received directly by individuals would not be held up. But, you know, that money doesn't necessarily go to individuals. It goes to banks and other places that then give it to those individuals. Congress, for example, established a program decades ago that provides farm loans for women, racial minorities, and Native Americans. A program that the first Trump administration participated in. Well, that program could theoretically be put under scrutiny, as the Times calls it, shut down, in other words, because it sounds similar to woke DEI or Marxist equity, whatever that means. In two pages, quote, we've got what amounts to 60 years of tradition and policies thrown up in the air, said Donald Kettle, professor emeritus and former dean at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy. He's consulted for multiple government agencies. He said, for those suffering most, the uncertainty will be immense. Indeed, it will. What to do about it? Well, I suspect we'll be talking about that in the days ahead as well. Josh Marshall over at TPM has an idea. He says, Democrats have very little power to stop the president from doing something like this, but there is one cudgel on the table. Republicans have been begging for their help to raise the debt ceiling this spring because they can't control their caucuses well enough to do it themselves, despite having the votes. The minimum requirement, he says, for Democrats should be no assistance without the president's agreement to follow the law and the Constitution. Good luck getting him to agree to do that. And after all, if they stop all this spending, maybe they won't even need to raise the debt ceiling after all. What do you know? Now, good-ish news, as I'll describe it here, breaking within the past hour as we go to air, a federal district judge on Tuesday granted an administrative stay in a challenge to all of this, pausing the plan for a week and setting a hearing for further arguments next Monday morning. The order only applies to the pause of disbursements in open grants, according to Judge Lauren Ali Khan. It doesn't get into the legality of the freeze, instead just gives the court more time for briefings from the parties. So we'll see what is affected and what is not. That hearing is to take place at 11 a.m. on Monday. The stay was issued just minutes before the freeze was scheduled to begin on Tuesday at 5 p.m. In a hastily assembled Zoom hearing this afternoon. The plaintiff, it's apparently the National Council of Nonprofits, saying that this is the end of the month. Nonprofits and grant recipients are facing down payroll, facing down rent payments. There are people who depend on these services, not just my clients and their members, but also members of the public who are downstream from this. She said the chaos caused by the complexity and ambiguity of OMB's supposed guidance has already caused questions in the public. Well, I should say so. A lawyer for the Justice Department, Trump's Justice Department, however, pushed back on the nonprofit claim, saying that they had not shown that any delay would force them to close their doors or to lay off staff. The judge said, I'm very sympathetic to your argument, but we will have to see. That's what Monday is for, to make that argument in full. Whether or not the nonprofits are able to identify a specific harm caused by the freeze will be central to their chances of Judge Ali Khan granting at least a temporary restraining order for then a full trial on all of this down the road. The judge said, I will be prepared if I'm not satisfied that you have met the standard for the temporary restraining order. I will be prepared to vacate the administrative stay on Monday. That means this directive would continue. What happens then? God only knows. Yes, constitutional crisis. We're not even through week two. Quick break, and we're back with Desi Doyen with, yes, I promised, a little bit of good news in her Green News Report. That's straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. We are running long, so let's get straight to it. Our latest Green News Report.
I do have to say FEMA is a big disappointment. We had it working well. We had great people, but FEMA's not good anymore.
Donald Trump weaponizes disaster, calls for dismantling FEMA. First rain in months helps douse Los Angeles fires. Plus,
everybody's lived experience is the same. Traffic in Midtown is dramatically down.
New York City's congestion pricing is working.
So there's that. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
With my actions today, we will end the Green New Deal and we will revoke the electric vehicle mandate. In other words, you'll be able to buy the car of your choice.
Awesome. Like I can now. This is your Green News Report. I'm gonna soak up the sun. So Desi Doyen, no matter how many times he says it, there is still no EV mandate.
I know.
But I'm glad he stopped it. What do you have for us today?
Well, first, good news. A slow-moving storm brought much-needed rain to extremely dry, wildfire-stricken Southern California over the weekend. The first rain in 8 months helped firefighters. They've nearly completely contained two major deadly fires. But the storm also triggered a handful of mudslides and debris flows in burn areas. City officials are also working to prevent fire-related contaminants from entering the drinking water supply.
But hey, we had some rain. Stop complaining.
As Bloomberg News reports, quote, Los Angeles has never needed FEMA more. But late last week, in a visit to L.A., climate denier President Donald Trump threatened the existence of the critical disaster agency, even as FEMA workers are assisting tens of thousands of Americans displaced by the L.A. fires, last year's hurricanes in North Carolina and Florida, Florida and ongoing long-term recovery from previous disasters. Trump ordered a review to look into the agency's future.
I'll also be signing an executive order to begin the process of fundamentally reforming and overhauling FEMA, or maybe getting rid of FEMA. I think, frankly, FEMA is not good. I think we're going to recommend that FEMA go away. And we pay directly. We pay a percentage to the state.
Trump's attack on FEMA mirrors Project 2025, the right-wing manifesto, which calls for states and cities to bear even more of the burden and costs of disaster recovery. Disaster management experts warn that dissolving FEMA would itself be a disaster because states lack the capacity and personnel to pick up the slack, particularly during a disaster. That would also ultimately harm Trump supporters, who lack the resources to quickly rebuild without government assistance. At a time when climate-intensified extreme weather disasters are worsening and taking an increasingly heavy toll across the country.
He wants to privatize FEMA, doesn't he?
Yep. Trump also agreed with congressional Republicans' threats to withhold disaster aid from California to extort policy changes. Trump also, bizarrely, called for suspending laws governing removal of hazardous waste from areas destroyed in the Los Angeles fires, and he called for blocking updated flood standards in North Carolina. The Republican-controlled North Carolina legislature recently passed sweeping new restrictions on zoning that could bar cities from strengthening their flood standards in the wake of Hurricane Helene. In a flood of actions, the Trump administration over the weekend abruptly fired 17 independent inspectors general at government agencies, including the Environmental Protection Agency, the Energy Department, Interior, and Agriculture, in a sweeping, unlawful move decapitating oversight of his administration. The Trump Justice Department halted all pending environmental cases. The EPA canceled programs that clean up heavily polluted Black and Latino communities and scrapped Biden-era standards that limit the amount of toxic PFAS chemicals that industries can release into the environment and drinking water. New York Times reports that Trump is stocking the EPA with officials who have served as lawyers and lobbyists for the oil and chemical industries.
Rather than scientists and, well, yeah, go ahead.
But there are some bright spots. Billionaire Michael Bloomberg has announced that for the second time, his nonprofit organization will cover the United States climate funding commitments at the United Nations after Trump withdrew from the Paris Climate Agreement for the second time. And finally, a few weeks ago, New York City launched the nation's first congestion pricing toll, a $9 charge for vehicles to enter Lower Manhattan to reduce traffic congestion, pollution, and raise revenue for the city's subway system. New data confirms that since going into effect, congestion pricing has indeed relieved gridlock. And bonus, inside the congestion relief zone, there has been a 55% drop in car crashes over the same period last year and a 50% drop in injuries.
Nice. And a whole bunch more money for the subways.
Yep.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.brandblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We'll turn Manhattan to an Isle of Joy.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always appreciated. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it for free anytime at bradblog.com. And hey, while you're there, help us celebrate our 21st anniversary by hitting a donate button to keep us on your public airwaves. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the social medias, including Blue Sky, you will find me at The Brad Blog. See you there. Until we see you here next time, hopefully tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.